Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, a film about a genocide. 25 years after making a documentary about the massacre of Mayans in Guatemala, a filmmaker becomes instrumental in indicting a dictator. Her new film, Granito, tells the story. Plus, existential cats do the rock, paper, scissors, robot. Awesomator Brady Carlson covers the best and the worst of viral culture. And later in the show, a Kickstarter checkup. We'll look back at some of the projects we've talked about on the show to see how things have turned out. But we begin with the secret life of plants. In 1968, L. Ron Hubbard, founder of the Church of Scientology, declared the results of his own scientific experiment. Tomatoes scream when sliced. However disturbing his announcement may have been, Hubbard is in good company when it comes to prodding garden produce for an emotional response. Other famous investigators of vegetable consciousness include Charles Darwin, his son, and the British physician Thomas Burgess. Latif Nasser is a doctoral candidate with the History of Science Department at Harvard, and he's also a contributor to Radiolab. He wrote about the history of research into the inner lives of plants for the Boston Globe and joins us now with more. Latif, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
Long before Hubbard appeared on the cover of Life magazine, staring pensively at a tomato that was rigged with electrodes, great minds had considered the possibility of a vegetable soul. How far back does this speculation go?
Well, maybe speaking slightly beyond my capacity as a historian, I think that the question of kind of what's going on inside plants, I think it's a sort of timeless question.
Do you? Any evidence of it through the ages?
Well, I think that for most of human history, probably, people have been talking about it more in, you know, mythology and literature and religion in terms of plants having souls and, you know, the plants' connection to human beings. But looking at it in science, which is, I guess, what I do, it is much easier because you can kind of tack it to specific thinkers.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of those thinkers?
Well, for instance, you can go back to one interesting person is Charles Darwin's grandfather, mm-hmm. Erasmus Darwin, who believed that plants had volition, that plants were capable of sensation of different kinds.
So there's something kind of hopeful about this line of thinking. Here's a little clip from the film, The Secret Life of Plants. It was made in the 1970s. Now it's talking about the work of Chandra Bose, one of the most dedicated researchers in the field.
In the same hall where Darwin, Huxley, and Faraday made history, the learned gathering listened with polite interest as the obscure Indian scientist described his pioneering measurements of radio waves. Touching the leaves of Mimosa pudica with a cotton soaked in ether, Bose demonstrates the fainting response in a plant. The object of his future experiments was to prove through the design and use of highly specialized machines that all the characteristic responses exhibited by animal tissue are also to be found in plants.
Okay, so Bose was working, I guess, in 1914. How was his work received? I mean, did people cock their eyebrows, embrace it? What?
At the time, one of his colleagues said that Bose was so divisive that the entire botanical community could be divided into Bose phobes and Bose files.
Well, he what was he doing? You know, sort of like I don't know, testing lilies or cabbages. I mean, what's this? What's the real search here? What's going on for us, Latif? That people want to ascribe some sort of meaning to plants or some sort of fidelity? What do you think is behind this research?
I think there's a kind of desire to anthropomorphize, to empathize with plants, and I think that there's a kind of ambivalence within science. How much are these plants like us, and how much is that, as you say, just a kind of idealistic pie in the sky notion, and how much is that, you know, stuff we can really observe and document?
You mentioned Erasmus Darwin, but his grandson Charles also delved into some of the feelings of plants. Tell us about some of his experiments. What was he doing and how were they done?
Sure. So, for instance, Darwin, Charles Darwin, along with his son, who was a botanist in his own right, Francis Darwin, they would do experiments at Down House, where they, you know, would they were in particular looking to see about the power of movement in plants. So, for instance, the way that plants sort of, almost like a drunk person, sort of teeter around in a circle, and why they do that, and whether it's sort of intrinsic to the plant, some kind of power, you know, self-powered movement of the plant, or whether it was just gravity. And Darwin believed that it was indeed something in the plant that was doing it, and he put the kind of, I guess you could say, volition, the part of the plant that was controlling it at the tip of the root, which he said was, I'm quoting, that it acts like the brain of one of the lower animals, uh-huh. which was quite a controversial claim at the time.
Didn't he also ask his son to play the bassoon to a plant for some time?
Correct. Correct. According to his son Francis, he had Francis go right close to, I believe it was a mimosa plant, and play a bassoon to it just to see what would happen. He called it a fool's experiment.
Did it seem to respond?
I don't think it did, but that doesn't really stop, you know, third graders across the country in science fairs trying the same thing.
We're speaking with Latif Nasser, a science historian. He's also a contributor to Radiolab. He wrote about the history of researching plant sensations for the Boston Globe. Well, in your article, you speculate that in every era, thinking about how plants experience life reveals a lot more about the general thinking of the time. What do you mean?
Well, I think it's that our questions of the moment are shaped by kind of what's going on around us, the time and place that we live, the conversations, be they political or artistic, that are going on at the same time.
Plants do exhibit some incredible reproductive abilities, defense mechanisms. What sort of sensitivities have we discovered through modern botany that might be mistaken for feelings, perhaps, or emotions?
Well, for instance, finding from recent botany that I find fascinating, it made headlines in about 2007, was that a pair of Canadian researchers found that plants can tell the difference between their own kin and strangers of the same species, and so that if, for instance, two plants of the, that are related are sharing the same, say, soil, they won't compete with each other to the same degree as they would otherwise.
Hmm. Where does research into plant feelings and thoughts stand today?
Well, I think it's certainly controversial for maybe obvious reasons. There was, for a good part of the 2000s, a movement, and it still sort of exists, although it's changed its name, called plant neurobiology, which was sort of kind of neuroscience of plants, trying to devote the ideas and methods of neuroscience to understand plants, and it is controversial, obviously, because plants don't have brains or nervous systems, but sort of that line of thinking, there are at least some botanists who think that that's useful and worthwhile.
How about you, Latif? Do you talk to your plants?
It's a good question. I don't. I'm kind of a nomadic scholar, so I don't really set my roots down enough to have a garden of my own.
I guess the question is always whether or not they talk back. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Latif Nasser, contributor to Radiolab, that's the NPR WNYC program, also to the Boston Globe, where he wrote about meet your vegetables. At wordofmouthradio.org is a link. Coming up, a presentation of some awesome web findings and social media from NHPR's digital host and curator of all things cool, Brady Carlson. That's when Word of Mouth continues.
Provides the cure, whose air we breathe. But who am I to doubt or question the inevitable being?